Welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Corey Allen alongside my wife, Pam.
Always good to be
having
here.
Having great conversations today again, like we do and try every week. Not only just on the air, but in our relationship.
That's the hope.
It's always the hope. We hope that what we talk about here on the air and the guests that join us translate into conversations for all those in the nation that are listening. Mm-hmm. And last week when we did the episode on initiation mistakes that we all make, all married people can make, there was a comment that came in on the platform, which you can find at my.smr.fm. But somebody, one of the guys made a comment that said, some men get confused when they upgrade from girlfriend 4.2 to wife 1.0. They get confused at all the changes it will bring. Apparently, they didn't realize that girlfriend 4.0 or 4.2 is an app, while wife 1.0 is an operating system.
That is perfect. IT geek. That's jokery there.
Yes, it is.
But there's some realness to that.
There absolutely is.
I kind of like that correlation.
As things change, we evolve, and we need to continue to adjust as we evolve, not only with the relationships we have with ourselves, but the relationships we have with each other, for sure. And that's what we try to do at Sexy Marriage Radio, is tackle some of the aspects of life and marriage and love and sex, because sometimes they're just flat out difficult, and sometimes they're great. And then there's anywhere, everywhere in between.
Right.
And so if you're new to the show, we're so glad you found us. We love the dialogues that we can have with you. And one of the ways you can do that is the aforementioned platform I just talked about. And also you can call us, leave us questions, comments, thoughts that you want to add to the show. 214-702-9565 is the voicemail line. Or email us at feedback@sexymarriageradio.com. Because all the emails that we get, we do interact with, and they become topics, or we will answer right away directly with you. And so we love the fact that the voices of the nation help shape where we go each and every week. And speaking of where we go this week, on today's episode, you know what, Pam, I'm feeling it's birthday month for me. And so everybody gets the full show today. It's my gift to them, everybody out there. I'm doing the, what is it, the Hobbit birthday, where I give gifts.
You give for gifts. Birthday. I love it.
So everybody gets the full show. And it's particularly because Emily Nagowski joined me. And she has a new book called Come Together, the Science and Art of Creating Lasting Sexual Connections, where she's known for her book, Come As You Are, which was revolutionary for lots and lots of couples, and particularly lots and lots of women. And so this is built off of that work, but as it applies to long-term standing relationships.
It's interesting to hear her take and how she tried to apply some things from that book to herself early on in this conversation. Quite interesting.
Yes.
Quite interesting.
She's very, very personal in this conversation and her experiences, not only as a writer and a researcher, but in her life as a married woman. And how everything unfolded for her in their marriage.
Her definition of normal, when you're talking about the sexual relationship, I'm still kind of chewing on that.
Okay.
And how that, what that looks like. There's a couple things I was chewing on. Her comment about desire not even necessarily being
a big factor.
A big factor,
and determines if it's a relevant component of good lasting sex.
I think there's a lot of conversation points to be had after this too.
There absolutely are. One of my quotes that I love from this is, great sex isn't about how much we want sex or how often we're having it. It's whether we like the sex we're having.
Right.
It's a good quote. And I got to, just to put a clarification out there, because of this conversation that we have, she, at the latter part of the episode, references effective neuroscience. Not effective, affective neuroscience, which is talking about our affect, our emotions, and all the different aspects therein. And she's quoting a researcher who is one of the renowned in that realm of research. And this is all in peer-reviewed research that she goes to. That's one of the things I really love about Emily, is she goes after real meaty research to help with what she does with the science from it.
Okay.
And she references a lust system in our biology. And so for a lot of our audience, we hear that word.
It's a trigger.
And it's like, wait, hold on. And so I'm just going to put it out there. This is describing the specific brain circuits and chemistries that are in all mammals, as this guy has determined, because he's determined there's seven, mm-hmm. and one of them is the lust category. And so it'll fit in the conversation, but I feel like I need to get ahead of that, because I think some people, we could hear that and immediately dismiss what comes after it. And what comes after it is worth examining.
Yeah, so listen, stay tuned, listen to context.
Absolutely, because I think it's just important. It's important variables to know in the manner in which what Emily is proposing here and the value therein.
Gotcha.
And so with that, enjoy the show right after this.
If you have sensitive skin, you know how hard it can be to find a product that doesn't cause irritation. But today's sponsor, OneSkin, makes it easy. Their topical supplements are formulated with soothing ingredients and natural antioxidants. Plus, they're gentle enough to use every day, even if you have sensitive skin. Founded by an all-woman team of scientists, OneSkin's products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Not only that, they're the first and only skin longevity company to target cellular senescence, a key hallmark of aging. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation often found in other skin products. I love their eye topical supplement that goes just around the eyes, works on those wrinkles coming around, those little crow's feet coming on my eyes. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspect of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code SMR at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code SMR. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Well, May is also Mother's Day month.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Absolutely, all the ladies out there. You play a pivotal role in mm-hmm. the lives of your family and those around you and yourself. And one of the things that stands out to me is a memory of a Mother's Day event where you are a fan of steak.
I am.
So grilled out some steaks, brought them in. We had the table all set. We're ready to go.
My mouth has been watering for these steaks.
Set the steaks down, and what happens? Our son gets up and moves, and he knocks over a big old glass of milk right onto the plate of steaks.
Yes, they were with cold white milk steaks.
Well, while that gift had a lot of meaning and value intended within it, there's also another gift that can be even better and longer lasting, which is the aspect of regular connections with your spouse.
Yeah.
That's why the Paired app is a perfect gift for that special someone in your life, because instead of just trying to do this one unique thing, it's an opportunity to try to connect regularly, because the thing that stands out to me most with the Paired app between you and I is mm-hmm. there's the regular prompt every day that can be a touch point between us.
Yeah, and lots of them are just jovial, you know, just fun connections. They're not all super deep, but they're just fun ways to connect and fun trips down memory lane.
And the beautiful thing is to use the app, you and your spouse, you both download it and you get paired together. And then everything that takes place there is just between the two of you.
Yeah.
And the thing I love the most is I'll answer something and I don't have an idea what yours is until you've done it too.
Yeah, you don't see each other's answers till you've answered yourself.
So there's just all the more encouragement for there to be a connection each and every moment that you can when that prompt happens. So we highly recommend this. It's been a fun addition to our regular routine. So if you want to find a way to connect even more regularly in your relationship, try going to paired.com/SMR and you get a 7-day free trial and then 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's Paired, PAIRED.com/SMR, and sign up today. You can give the gift of connection beyond just Mother's Day, fellas, and connect with your wife each and every day, because a happier relationship starts here.
Well, I should have recorded right when we got on and just are catching up, Emily. But welcome to the show again, Emily. It's so great to see you again.
It's so great to be here again.
And
I can't believe you're willing to put up with me so much.
Oh, well, you know, we're not even close to the threshold of being too much. That's not even a remote possibility as far as I'm concerned, girl. So what I want to kind of jump into, because we've done Come As You Are, just to give the audience a quick recap, was the initial conversation. And then during the shutdown, you kind of updated it all because the science had evolved,
yeah.
Which I commend you, because not a lot of authors go back and update their work. So that's awesome. But now you have the new book, which has Come Together. And I love this idea because it's long-term lasting connections and long-term relationships. And so the easiest softball question you're going to get from me, Emily, is how did this book come to be?
Yeah. So this book came to be because of Come As You Are. You might think that writing a book about sex, where you're thinking about sex and talking about sex and reading about sex and learning about sex all day, every day, might be super sexy. Turns out, no, it's just really, really stressful. And so I was so stressed out that I lost all interest in actually having any sex. And bear in mind that, like, my husband and I had been together for like a year and a half when I started writing Come As You Are. We were newlyweds, and we went months with nothing. It got a little better when I finished the book, and then I went on book tour, and it got a lot worse. So I tried following my own advice from Come As You Are. You know, responsive desire. You put your body in the bed. You let your skin touch your partner's skin, and your body's going to go, oh, right, that's a great idea. I'm glad I really like this, and I like this person. And I put my body in the bed, let my skin touch my partner's skin, and I would cry and fall asleep. And I thought, well, I need more help than I give in my own book. And so I did what any good sex nerd does. I turn to the peer-reviewed science on how couples sustain a strong sexual connection over the long term. And among people who have great sex, how do they do it? So what I found in that science exploded my brain, and it made pretty much irrelevant the entire sort of like popular culture mainstream conversation about sex and long-term relationships. Because among therapists in particular, it's like, okay, intimacy. Is intimacy the enemy of the erotic and you need distance to keep the spark alive? Or is intimacy the foundation of the erotic and you need closeness to keep the spark alive? Here's the thing. People who have great sex and long-term relationships don't talk about spark. They don't talk about desire. They talk about pleasure. They talk about authenticity and connection and vulnerability and empathy. They like the sex they have. And that's the foundation of it all, is pleasure.
Yeah.
And doesn't it make sense that, like, if you don't like the sex that's available to you in your relationship, of course you don't want it. That's not a dysfunction.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in some regards, this is that concept of just when you finally see something that's just like makes so much sense, but we complicate it trying to figure it out.
But let me point out that I was not in a relationship where I dreaded the sex because I knew I wasn't going to like it. One of the advantages of being a sex educator is that, like, I can work my way to a place with my partner where, like, we're winning. Like, we do it really well. And I knew that, like, if I could just get there, wherever there was, I knew I would have a really good time. I'd be really glad that we got to the sexy part. And I couldn't get there. So the book is really for any couple that's struggling for any reason with sexuality, whether it's because you never liked the sex to begin with, or you used to, but now, like, it's just... you used to be like, it was really easy for you to get to a sexy state of mind, but now your life is just too complicated and it's really difficult to get to a sexy state of mind. Whatever the obstacles are between you and the sexual connection that you long for, I think you're going to find strategies that will help.
Okay. So let's pick one to kind of just dive through and meander of the idea of, I mean, because I think of my audience, I think of my own journey in some ways too of, yeah, this is good. And then we kind of lost track and it became a functional thing because I use the vernacular of there's functional sex and then there's like the blessed few sex that they're really enjoying, both are, and it's freely chosen and it's conscious most of the way through. And, you know, there's a connection and there's a lot more going on. But
see,
if we're talking
me,
about.
Like, oh, I would love that to be just everybody's like standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody likes what's happening the whole time and they're free to stop or leave with no unwanted consequences. That's pretty much like, for me, that's baseline.
Okay. Right. Because you use the example of the comment of normal sex.
Right.
Right. I mean, unpack
yeah,
that real quick, because I think
me,
this is a fascinating content.
Yeah. Am I normal? Like, this is some form of this question is the question I get asked most often. I'm sure you hear it all the time, too. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm experiencing. Mm-hmm. Is it normal? Answer, yeah. People just vary tremendously and they change across their lifespan. But people love a definition. So I made up a definition that works for me. Like, are you having normal sex? For me, normal means that everybody involved is glad to be there. And free to leave with no unwanted consequences, including no unwanted emotional consequences. None of that like, oh, but you said you would, or, but if you loved me, and I say that having been the person who made someone feel that way and having been the person mm-hmm. who said and did that stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, these things happen. Don't worry if that's been a part of your dynamic. But normal sex, oh, and also obviously no unwanted pain. If it's wanted pain, do you? If it's unwanted pain, it's a medical condition. It is not normal to experience unwanted pain with sex. And there are usually effective medical interventions that can help with that.
Correct.
Widely varied depending on what the situation is. And perfect sex. Because no one reads 100,000 words of affective neuroscience because they want to be a normal lover, right? Nobody wants their partner to turn to them afterward and be like, that was really normal sex, honey. Thanks.
Oh, that's, yeah. You nailed the normal today, baby. That was awesome.
Yeah, like that was real normal. Yeah. I felt like I was free to, I enjoyed it and I was free to leave at any time if I wanted to. Thanks for that.
Right.
Like, that's just consent. Right. But perfect sex is when it's normal. Everybody's glad to be there, free to leave with no unwanted consequences, and everyone turns towards what's happening right here in this moment with kindness, compassion, and curiosity without judgment. So that means that if somebody would like to have an erection and an erection is not happening, instead of worrying, the fastest way to turn something about sex into a problem is to worry about it. So instead of worrying, mm-hmm. you just be like, cool, neat. There are a lot of really fun things you can do with a penis that is not erect. Let us try mm-hmm. those things now that we have this opportunity. Or you could just turn attention completely away from the lack of erection and do all, there's so many other things you could be doing that don't involve an erection, right? And you just don't worry about it. You don't take it personally. You don't worry that this person is broken or that person is broken or no, there's something problem in our relationship. Just don't worry about it. You turn toward what's happening with kindness and compassion and empathy.
Right. And I love the fact that you're describing the one of the things that I catch from this is normal is a baseline. It's not a goal.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a good distinction.
Yeah. People ask if they're normal, I think, because they're worried about being broken and they feel like there's like a trajectory you can be on from broken to normal to perfect. And that's just not how it goes. In one sense, we are all already normal. And in another sense, we are all already broken because we grew up in a world that taught us a bunch of lies about who we're supposed to be as sexual people and what our relationship is supposed to look like. And we are all in the process of recovering from the wounds inflicted on us by those lies.
Right. Right. And so let's go through the idea of you got a couple that they've been married for a while. It started normal. There you go. I'm going to use that word. Baseline. It was functional. They both were kind of anticipating it and excited about it. And then
they both
something
liked
changed.
It.
Right. Something. Or and then something changed. Well, that's, but those are two different journeys that people have been on, yeah. Because there are times where sometimes one of the partners is like, I've never been interested in this, and I don't really want to have to face the fact to be able to say, you know what, honestly, honey, I'm okay if this never happens in my life again, because there's a different result of that move.
Yeah. So let's take a couple where, like, things were good at the beginning. Things were perfect. Like, meh, people were fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
it was enjoyable,
time passed,
pleasurable, and fun. Yeah.
And they show up in the therapist's office, and one partner says, you know, I used to be into it, but I'm sorry this hurt my partner feelings, but honestly, I'd be glad if we never had sex again. That would be totally fine with me. I'm going to give them as their therapist, Peggy Kleinplatz, the therapist and researcher in Ottawa, who is the leader of the Optimal Sexual Experiences team. And Peggy being Peggy is going to say, okay, so tell me about this sex you do not want. And even though maybe at the beginning it was perfectly enjoyable, pleasurable, are they now going to enjoy sex where they feel joyful, pleasurable, totally free and at choice and authentic, able to be their full selves? Or is it going to be sex that is sex by rote, sex where they have to pretend to be someone they're not really, sex where they feel like their pleasure is subservient to someone else's, sex that is dismal and disappointing, in Peggy's words. And so they describe this sex, and Peggy says, well, you know, I rather like sex, but if that's the sex I were having, I wouldn't want it either. So she then goes to the gut punch question, what kind of sex is worth wanting?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the work starts for this couple. There was previously, in this example, sex worth the time and effort that it takes to have sex. Because there's a lot of things we could do with our time, right? You could be watching Parks and Recreation. That is also fun. Why would you have sex when you could be watching All Creatures Great and Small? It's my current obsession on PBS.
Perfect.
Like, why? Sex is kind of more effortful. Like, why would you do that? One of the questions that I recommend that people think about for themselves and then talk about with their partners is, what is it that you want when you want sex? And also, really importantly, what is it that you don't want when you don't want sex? And people's answers often surprise each other. Like, what you expect your partner to say, maybe not what they're going to say. And then what is it that I like when I like sex with this partner? And what is it that I don't like? Whew, that's an intense conversation. What is it that I don't like when I don't like sex with this partner?
Yeah. And this goes back to how it can all be framed. Part of the struggle is the element of the lies and the myths that we've all bought on what is good, what is bad, what should I want, what should not want, you know, all that stuff that
and
happens
what sex
with
means
both
in the relationship. Like, what is the, like, function of, like, what does sex, what role does sex serve in a relationship? And so in a standard example of, like, a husband who is always trying to initiate sex, and the more he tries to initiate sex, the more the wife is like, nope, and even more no. And the first time he tries to initiate sex, maybe the only reason she's saying no is because she had a really long, stressful, difficult day, and she just doesn't have the energy. But he spent his entire life learning that whether or not he's valuable as a human being can be measured by his ability to get somebody else to let him put his penis inside them. And so even though all she's saying is, like, I am tired today, what he feels is, no, actually, maybe you're not quite worth the space you take up and the air you breathe.
Right.
Which isn't at all what she's saying, but might be absolutely what he is feeling. And until you ask each other that question, you don't know.
Right. Right. And that you talk about something that truly impacts the way we interact and interrelate with ourselves and with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get these elements of aspects of lives that we haven't really looked at closely and then looked at. I like to think of it in the terms of the two choice dilemma that I get of, well, I'm faced with this or this. So what do I want to do about that? How do I really, because that's a personal thing then that then becomes relational in the context of the way I think, at least.
Yeah. What an opportunity in that conversation to be like, what are other things that we can't, like, given that, like, person B is, I'm just too tired for that. Are there other things we can do that I have energy for that are going to reinforce for you a sense of connection in our relationship and a sense of wellness in your own identity? Because I love you and I want to be with you and I am too tired. And so let's find something else that meets that need.
Mm-hmm. And as you said at the very beginning, includes elements of pleasure for both sides, elements, things that draw us in. Because tell me if I'm off in the way I'm hearing this conversation and the conversations we've had in the past, Emily, that you've talked about what you made the comment in your story as we started this of, oh, I'm going to follow my own. I'm going to actually go read my own book and implement what I tell other people to do. And so I know if I get myself in a state and we touch, my body will come along possibly. Right. And so, yes, possibly. But you also
the piece that was missing
is
I was not getting myself into that state. I was just putting, because here's the thing. I had never struggled before this. It had always been like, I am among the, one of the weird things about me as a sex educator is I didn't become a sex educator because I was struggling and I found answers to my own problems in the science. My sexual response like was classic the way my culture taught me it was supposed to be until I started writing a book about sex. I was a sex educator to teach everybody else that they actually are normal and they got lied to. When I read the research, I was like, oh, other people aren't like me. And I imagine it's probably really difficult for them to think that they're supposed to be like me when actually they're they're the ones who are more typical. And then it happened to me. And the answer I needed required some of the most intensive affective neuroscience I've ever written about. But it's totally worth it because it actually was the key for me.
Yeah. And you talk about, I've heard you on some other episodes with people when you're in this current stage of talking about this book. Of you talk about you've been dealt some physical things that have happened. You've had elements of tension that's come up because of the stress of a book that's coming that came out, and how that's played out in your married life is really touching to hear you describe it. So
well, I am married to the best human on the face of the earth. That's. And I would say that I'm lucky, but I've had a lot of therapy, so I earned him. So the first time I ever told the story about, like, I put my body in the bed and, like, we were naked and we were going to go and I just started crying and then fell asleep, the reaction people had was like, oh, that must have been so hard for him. He must have been so disappointed. And it hadn't even crossed my mind that he might have that experience because he was so completely understanding and supportive. And he like brought me tea for when I woke up and there was just no pressure or demand. He just understood that I was exhausted and I needed help, not more pressure to do something he wanted us to be doing. And so the only clinical intervention that he and I participated in was a Hold Me Tight workshop based in emotionally focused therapy as a weekend long workshop. I don't know if you've ever done a weekend long couples workshop. they're hard. I truly believe that part of what makes them effective is you see all these other couples and you look at them and you're like, well, I'm glad I'm not with that guy. Can you believe those people? They're hopeless. Man, I'm glad we got the problems we got, because the problems we got is nothing compared to those people. Like, it really gives a sense of like we are like. But so we did this very simple exercise. There's this deck of cards with just statements, like things you could say to your partner if you have felt like you couldn't say things to your partner. You just hand the person a card. And I'm going to cry when I tell this story. So, like, we have really been struggling. It's 2016. I have just finished the Come As You Are book tour. Things are about as bad as they've ever been. And Rich is shuffling through the deck, and he just hands me this card that says, I want us to be on the same team.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, because he and I... We were both single for a long time. We are both Gen X, which means that we grew up like latchkey kid cooking for ourselves at the age of 10, like very much meeting our own needs. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it is a different state of mind. So when we got married, right from the beginning, we were really good roommates who had really great sex. And then the sex went away and we were still really good roommates. We made a great like householding partnership, but we were not actually collaborating. We just divided everything in half. I did my part and he did his part. And when I was on the road, I was doing my work and he was managing everything at home. And when I got home from book tour, like it was totally not intuitive to either of us to rely on the other person for anything. We did not want to be a burden on the other person. The reason he was so loving and generous and supportive when I cry and fall asleep instead of us having sex was because he didn't want to be a burden on me. And the revelation I had when he was like, I want us to be on the same team is, oh, we're supposed to rely on each other. The difference between us being roommates and us being married is we trust each other and we turn toward each other with our needs and we rely on each other for help. And that's that. Our sex life was like, if I could just get to the sex part, that part was going to be good. So I had to fix that part of the relationship piece. And then the my brain piece. I have not been dealt the easiest brain hand of cards in the world.
Okay.
So can we talk about the emotional floor plan?
Absolutely.
This is the thing that did it for me. Okay. So Jacques Panksepp, the father of affective neuroscience, proposed a model of human emotion that said there are 7 primary process emotions. And what I did was turn this into a metaphor of like a floor plan. Let's say each of the emotional primary process emotions is a space that you can be in your brain. And some of them are closer to each other than others are. So one of the spaces is the lust space. Broadly, there's sort of 2 categories. There's the pleasure favorable spaces and the pleasure adverse spaces. The pleasure adverse spaces are easy to talk about. We are all probably familiar with fight, flight, freeze, or fight, flight, freeze, flop, fawn. There's so many drama responses.
Yes, but there are.
So when you're in those spaces, when you're in the rage space, which is fight, your brain, as a mammal, your brain is interpreting something in the world as a stressor that you are most likely to get rid of by destroying it. That's what everything from irritation and annoyance through frustration and anger up to total rage, like this is in my way and I need to destroy it, right? That's not a space where it's going to be easy for you to get from that state of mind into the lust space. That space is usually pretty far away from the lust space. Mm-hmm. And can we agree that if your body's motivation is, I want to destroy my partner, that's not a space to be engaging sexually together, right?
No.
Yeah. Okay, good. So then there's flight, which is fear, the fear space. Everything from slight worry, fear, up through terror, right? And anxiety mm-hmm. also lives in the fear space. When I got in the bed, instead of being in the lust space, which is this pleasure favorable space where your brain automatically interprets every sensation as being kind of sexy and like turning you on, mm-hmm. I was not in that space when I got in the bed. I was in the fear space. I was anxious. I was like carrying around all this wound up stress and anxiety about the writing process, about the book tour process, about whether or not I was doing it right. Plus, I was working a full-time job at the same time, right? So I was bouncing around in the fear space, and it is not easy to transition out of the fear space. So just as with rage, your brain's like, here's a threat that I can cope with best by trying to destroy it. In the fear space, your brain says, here's a stressor that I can cope with best by trying to escape it, trying to run away.
Right.
And so when I put my body in my bed and touch my partner's skin, instead of my body going, oh, ooh, sexy, my body went, oh, I'm safe now. I don't have to hold on to this fear. I am connected to my favorite person on earth. I feel safe with this person, and I can let go of all this stress mm-hmm. I've been carrying around. And that was the crying, was my body moving through the stress response cycle. Okay, so when I get out of the stress response cycle, I cry myself out of it. Am I now in a sexy state of mind? No, I'm physically exhausted. Hence the nap, and then probably a bath, and then a snack, and then I can get to a sexy state of mind. And when I understood, oh, here's the path I have to travel. I need to get out of the fear space. I need to take care of my basic physical health. Then I can get to one of the spaces that's right near the lust space. So no wonder it's not easy. No one, like all people who are like, it should just be easy and natural and spontaneous. It shouldn't require any effort. When I looked at the actual affective neuroscience of like what it was taking for my brain to transition from that fear space into the sexy space, that takes deliberate, intentional effort, and it takes time and skills. Yeah. To be able to make all those and support from my partner. Imagine me having to go through all this and my partner's looking over my shoulder the whole time being like, are you ready yet? Are you ready yet? Are you ready yet?
Tick, 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 come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what's so touching the first time I heard you describe that. You didn't go into that detail, but the element of how the goal – because I would think of all of this conversation, the goal as I see it with couples is, I think most of them, if they were to try to be descriptive, is I'm trying to actually get collaborative with my partner. You know, I want to be collaborative with my spouse. I want collaborative living that's not just the cohabitating and running a household and managing things well. Because a lot of people can do that because it doesn't require the intimacy and authenticity. It just requires responsibility. And us latchkey kids, we can do that. I can take care of my scene. I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah. So I come by my over-functioning honestly.
Absolutely.
But if I can take care of 100% level, of my stuff and about 30% of your stuff and still be fine.
Fair enough. But if I want this at a deeper level, though, now we're talking about the elements of I have to learn to receive support, to be cared for, to be sought after. And that's something that's hard, I think, for humans to do in general.
It's hard to ask for help, but I think it's even harder to accept it.
Absolutely. And the statement I use all the time when I'm teaching this with couples is, okay, so if somebody gives you a gift because of something you've done, do you say, you're welcome? Or do you, oh, it was no big deal, I'm happy to do it, which is trouble receiving what was just given to you.
Yep.
It's really difficult, but the nuances is where all this plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. Accepting help, both is one of the most difficult things I've ever done and one of the most transformative things I've ever done. Because when I stop doing 130% of the work, when I just do 100% and it's like 80% my stuff, 20% his stuff, it's not even that. It's like 92% my stuff, 8% his stuff. Let's face it. He's doing his whole thing.
Right.
When I have, that means I have energy left to be a person in connection with another person. The best relationship advice I ever got is actually from my grandmother. It's in the like advice for men section because my grandmother says, if both partners give 50-50, you've got half a relationship. Each person has to give 100%. And also not more than 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
That's good, grandma.
Give everything you have and not more.
Yeah. That's good.
My grandparents were married from when they were 18. My grandfather enlisted in the Army in World War II, actually the Air Force, and they got married that year. And they were married until they both died in their early 70s.
Wow. That's something to strive for. Absolutely.
Yeah. Not to say they were happy and it was easy the whole time.
Oh, that's the one thing that always has been funny to me. I don't remember where I heard this first from, but some guy got up and he was speaking and he said, yeah, I've been married. My wife and I we're going on 21 years now. And everybody applauded. He's like, wait, what are you applauding for? We just might have exceptional pain tolerances with each other. You know, who knows what you're actually applauding for? And that's the sophistication of what marriage actually is in my book, is it requires more of our development, of our facing life on life terms. But it also, this is the thing I love, it's profound. It takes me places I can't go on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so good.
Which,
well, Emily, this has been a treat, as always. Like, oh, keep going. Yeah.
Just if, like, the sex version of this is the last chapter of the book. Like, most of the book is, like, here are tools that you need to build a strong sexual connection that centers pleasure. Here are some strategies for solving problems. But the last chapter is about ecstasy. And talk about going places that you can't go by yourself. Like, there are some places you can go emotionally and physically when there is a partner to walk with you up that mountain like, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it's worth it.
Oh, no. Yeah. And that's where how we started this, the categorization from the theorist I did all my training under, he used the three categories of sexual people or couples, which is the dysfunctional and then the functional and then the blessed few. And what the requirement to get into the blessed few is more of self involved in this, all of self involved in what goes on in that aspect of your life. It's not just we do great things. It's also I show up in all of me most of the time, which means of what we've been talking about.
People think adventurous sex means like there's a risk you might get caught or, oh, we're going to like do role play.
Right.
The like adventurous sex is turning on the lights and opening your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually speaking up and saying something in the midst of it. Like, you know what? Hold on a second.
Let's try something different.
Do this. Or for some people, and I want to commend this too. For some people, it's speaking up and saying, you know what? This doesn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you got a different level of adventurousness right around the corner.
Because when you say this doesn't do it for me, it opens up the conversation to what does do it.
Yep.
Oh,
totally.
So powerful.
Totally. Well, Emily, thank you so much for the dialogue again, as always. How can people first off get the book, which, you know, I know you can get it any place where they're sold, but how do they find you also?
Yep, book is available everywhere they're sold. Special shout out to the audiobook of this particular one. Because there's some dark stuff in there, I worked hard to make it sort of like, I made deliberately silly voices and there's deliberately silly music. I really like the audiobook on this one. And okay. Also, EmilyNagoski.com. I have a newsletter. It's approximately once a week. It's mostly me answering people's sex questions.
Perfect. Well, Emily, thank you so much for the work and the conversation today.
Thank you. My pleasure, always.
Emily has a definite energy she brings to her work, to all the episodes I've ever heard. I mean, this is the third time on Sexy Marriage Radio, but I've also heard her on other shows. Mm-hmm. And she definitely brings an energy to what... You can tell what she gets excited about.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always good to be around someone who's passionate about what they're talking about. I mean, there's some topics that you're like, oh my gosh, this person is super passionate about something I don't care anything about.
Right.
I'm assuming the people listening are interested in the topic.
Absolutely. And I love the value to me of Emily's work and the value of this conversation is this one had a different flair in the personal touch on our dialogue. Which that's something that seems to have rung true all the way through in making this book, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited because this has already been mentioned on the platform a couple of days ago. This is actually mentioned. Hey, has anybody read this yet? And some people are chiming in. Just got it. Not yet. It's on the list. You know. So now we have her on the episode to help fan that flame all the more. Well, this has been Sexy Marriage Radio. If we left something undone or... you want to add to the conversation, please let us know, 214-702-9565 or feedback at sexymarriageradio.com. Transcripts are available on each of the episode's pages, as well as advertisers' deals and discount codes. You can find them all at each of the episode's pages at smr.fm. So please consider supporting those who help support the show. So however you took a little bit of time out to spend it with us this week, thanks, and we'll see you next time.